Blog Talk Radio.
Mr. Mark Ratledge, along with several of the names. I don't feel like saying them all tonight. There are times I have the patience to do my gimmick, and other times I don't have the patience for me. In any case, this is TV Party Tonight, and it's When in Rome Week here on the Ratledge and Broadcasting Network. We are anxiously awaiting our guest host tonight, Mr. Andrew Graham. He should be calling in any moment now. And I brought him on for When in Rome Week to talk about the Netflix series, miniseries as it were, six episodes long it was, Roman Empire, Reign of Blood, a docuseries based on historical events. It's all about Commodus. Commodus was one of the Roman emperors. And I didn't really, as much as I've studied Roman history, Roman Empire history, Commodus was not one of the ones I knew a whole hell of a lot about. Frankly, I saw the length of the series, and so it was about Rome and thought, well, you know, this would be an easy one to tackle and talk about. So I really went into it blind. And I learned what it was about and what the whole story was pretty much as I was watching it. And here's our guest now to tell us what he thought of the series and what he knew about it going into it, if anything at all. The our man with the historical fighting background, the hell of an introduction, isn't it? Mr. Andrew Graham, the master of war. How you doing, sir?
I don't know if I'd call myself that or not, Mark. Thank you for the introduction. In imitation of one of my favorite sci-fi writers, Ron Moore, the Scotch this evening is Highland Park 25.
All right, so how are things going up in the Canadian offices of the Ratledge and Broadcasting Network? I understand you sent me an article today. The government's going to give you all cash money. Is that what's happening? They're just going to say, everyone
no.
in Canada, here's health care, here's money. Well, don't bother us no more. Is that what's happening?
Well, no, it's more the Ontario government, which is one of our larger provinces, decided to do a pilot program with what is it, basic minimum income or something like that?
Basic income, yeah.
They're trying it in three communities. That said, they're kind of needing it right now, given the way their economy has gone. So,
I believe I talked about this a few months back. I'll be curious to see how it goes.
Hey, it'll link.
You know, it's only a 60-year-old idea that came out of the Nixon administration. Yeah, eventually its time will come. But speaking of old ideas, let's get to this. Now, did you know anything about this series before I suggested that we watch it and talk about it?
I'm trying to remember. I think I might have tried to. I'm a bit of a documentary junkie, and I'll watch all these historical ones. And I think I actually tried to just put it on in the background one day before you had even mentioned it to me, and well, one of the sex scenes came up and the kids were in the room, so it's like, yeah, I can't watch that.
Yes, kids can definitely alter your viewing habits. So I have the Orange is the New Black story is well told on this network. though apparently we don't learn our lesson, because my wife recently, we have kids who have moved into the neighborhood, and my children have befriended them, and they were in our house recently playing, and my wife was trying to watch Harlots on Hulu. And, you know, if you don't know you're going to see sex in Harlots, I don't know why you're watching the show in the first place. But she attempted to watch this with the, she attempted to watch this show with the kids in the house, and then was surprised, I tell you, when there was sex on the TV, and she had to turn it off quickly before the kids saw anything. But yes, there's boobies galore in Roman Empire Reign of Blood. But more than boobies, we also have a, I guess a factual, I mean, it's a documentary series, dramatized documentary series on how Commodus came to be emperor and his, I'm going to, throughout this discussion, refer to Commodus as the Vince McMahon of the Roman Empire.
Is it bad? I just want to refer to him as Joaquin.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I didn't realize that Andrew is drawing reference to the movie Gladiator with Russell Crowe. And I didn't realize that's what that was, that the movie Gladiator was sort of a fictional telling or a fictional story based on the life of Commodus. The big thrill here.
I would argue that portions of this one are also a little bit fictional, but anyway.
Okay. The big thrill here, the big hook, and partially the reason why I'm going with he's the Vince McMahon of the Roman Empire or Roman history is, and it starts you right up with this, and then they kind of go back and tell you how we got to that place. The big hook here is that this is the only Roman emperor, and correct me when my facts go off the rails here for me, but the only Roman emperor who competed as a gladiator as emperor. And I'll just go ahead and spoil the ending. Everything's a work. Even in antiquity, everything is a work. You know how they said in Spaceballs, fuck, even in the future, nothing works? Well, everything is also a work. Not only does he compete as a gladiator, but he works his matches until he done pisses people off and they throw him off the island. They kill him.
Can I spoil one other thing, Mark?
Oh, please, spoil away.
I'm going to spoil away. Sean Bean makes it to the end.
Yes, it's one of the few things in fiction where Sean Bean lives. He lives.
Apparently, there's an article I saw on Facebook the other day. Apparently, Sean Bean actually talks about what his favorite death scene is.
Somebody,
I haven't watched it, but I'm going to have to look it up.
Somebody, you know, as we all know, there's always an intern somewhere out there working for some company who's listening to my podcast and getting ideas, which, by the way, intern, the intern that works for Warner Brothers in DC, I have a pitch to how to get Power Girl on The Flash and how to do the Red Sun storyline. But that's the whole thing for another day. So be on the lookout for that. Or just call me directly. I'm still waiting for my phone call to become a consultant for Warner Brothers in DC, because God knows they need the help. In any case, that's not what we're going to talk about. All right. So the big hook is that he competes as a gladiator. That's where we begin with episode one, is he walks out with a big bear on his head, he competes as a gladiator. Oh, I'm sorry, the lion. You're right, sorry. I should know my animals. And he gets his ass kicked.
Haven't you eaten
a
lion?
I have. I had it on a taco. It was delicious. I've also had a bear.
How was that?
With a lot of the game meat that I've tried tends to be a bit tough. I suspect that the meat that we are accustomed to eating in our day-to-day diets became so because it's more tender, less tough, and obviously the animal itself could be raised in capture, could be raised on a farm. Though there is apparently a quote-unquote lion farm somewhere in Chicago where Cisco gets its lion meat from. I know that because I asked.
It could be because also they're all predators.
And it makes them taste different.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I haven't had bear or anything like that. I have had quite a bit of moose, courtesy of my father-in-law, and that is quite tasty.
Mooses are herbivores, aren't they?
Sorry?
Mooses eat vegetation, don't they?
Yeah, definitely. It's like a gamier version, like a venison or something like that.
The little venison that I've had is very spicy. Welcome to Chef Talk, Game Meat Edition with Andrew and Mark. All right.
Yes, I talk food too. I'm beyond history and fighting.
But that's all we needed you for here, goddamn it! Don't mess up your gimmick.
That's why I'm a Bourdain fan.
I have not watched many of his shows. I have some odd reason. It's one of those, he's too cool for school for me. You know, it's like, oh, Anthony Bourdain, he does all those shows. But I don't have that same aversion to Gordon Ramsay. I'm weird like that.
No reservations is good. Anyway, we got to stop getting off track.
So out walks Commodus with a lion on his head, or a bear or a tiger. Oh, my. And he gets his ass handed to him momentarily, and that's where we freeze frame and go, well, how did we get ya? And our story takes us to the beginning, where his father, Marcus Aurelius, and I have a special connection to Marcus Aurelius, and you might be saying, what possible connection to Marcus Aurelius do you have? That's what my mother calls me. Not when I'm in trouble. When I'm in trouble, she usually calls me, hey, asshole. But just as a loving sort of, you know, nickname, she would call me Marcus Aurelius, and I don't know if she even knew that that was an emperor or just a name she heard once. But as soon as I saw that's where we were starting, I was like, hey, that's my nickname my mother gave me. Anywho, he is our philosopher king, and we meet Commodus, and Commodus is the spoiled rich kid of the philosopher king, hanging about in Rome. Sleeping with the women, drinking the wines, and not really taking much of life seriously. And his mother finally tells him, you know, much like a Def Leppard song, hey, you, get your lazy ass out of bed. Or Kennedy, one of the two. You can go with Def Leppard or Kennedy in this instance. In that case, she says, get out of bed, kick the hookers out of your bed, put some pants on. You're going to Germania to go learn how to be emperor next to your father. So what were your sort of first impressions as we delved into episode one, and we meet Commodus, the spoiled prince, and this idea of, hey, you lazy sack, you could put up, and you need to go learn how to be king. Get going.
I kind of have very mixed feelings about this series as a whole, and maybe I'll get those out of the way right now, and then we can kind of go episode by episode. I've watched a lot of different kinds of documentaries, I just finished watching a great one called Oklahoma City on Netflix this weekend by American Experience, which was fantastic. And this was a weird one because I've seen kind of the dramatized documentaries before. I think the one that springs immediately to mind is the one that National Geographic did called Killing Lincoln, which I thought was done tremendously well. And this one's kind of weird because they're kind of doing it – they're trying to mix like a really melodrama – you know, sordid melodrama kind of acting storytelling a la The Tudors, Game of Thrones, Outlander to some degree, that sort of thing. And then they're kind of framing it around kind of like a very old school, like BBC documentary with a narrator and experts and things like that. And it doesn't quite know what it wants to be. In some cases, it wants to be kind of an in-depth historical thing, and in some cases, the producers left things out, which kind of questions that. And on the flip side, the melodrama is not fun enough to be isn't fun enough. Like, say, I think of something like The Tudors, which is historically inaccurate as hell, but is also fun as hell because everything's so over the top. That's what I mean. You know, the first episode kind of covers everything off. I think it covers a lot of your basics. I mean, it starts to talk about some of the fundamental running of the Roman Empire. It talks about, I'm trying to remember to what degree they start to talk about how much of Commodus was actually an exception, because he was the first, let me pull up the Wikipedia page here. I should note that I am not a classicalist. I am a historian. He was the first one born in the purple, i.e. born during his father's reign, and he was one of the first emperors to actually have a hereditary succession as opposed to just being chosen by the previous emperor and then thereby adopted.
Right.
That was one of the things that actually probably could have covered better in Gladiator, the movie, where Marcus Aurelius choosing Maximus to become emperor wouldn't have been out of the ordinary, because that was fairly common for someone else to be chosen, not being their children, but maybe within the family, though.
I tell you, here's my overall take on the series, and we'll hit this a little bit more in depth as we talk about it, but I would say it is a tale of two stories. And the first story, I think, actually moves pretty well and is interesting to me. I absolutely am with you in that it doesn't seem to know what it wants to be. And one of my criticisms of the show is that the factual information, the documentary part of it is interesting to me and captured my attention. The drama, it was like, well, we just told them what the facts are here, so we'll dramatize this other part of it. And a lot of times throughout the series, I felt the drama wasn't nearly as interesting. It almost came across like CW melodrama without the superpowers.
Sure, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I mean, the drama is kind of weighed down by the fact that I don't think anyone's a particularly, like, outstanding actor. And on top of that, they're kind of saddled with this habit that the series has of showing, and it happens one of two ways. It's either they show an obvious emotion and then it's narrated, or it's narrated and then they show the obvious emotion. It's like, you know, Commodus is looking worried. And it's like, Commodus was worried about whatever. It's And no disrespect to Sean, he was reading the script he was given, but it wasn't edited well.
You almost want to talk to the narrator, you know, but that would be very comical. And Commodus was worried about all these people betraying him. I am? You know, all right.
Also, I got to say, the guy who played Commodus, I think you're going to call him Vince McMahon. I'm sorry, I don't like to go with this one, but I got to call him Angry Dude Bro Commodus.
Well, he does have a smoking hot body. I mean, I ain't getting nothing, but hubba hubba.
He's angry CrossFit Commodus.
It does look like, to fill out the cast of this thing, they went into gyms and found anyone that could read.
Yeah, that's not too far off.
But the tale of two stories, and I want to see if you're with me on this. The first part of it is, you know, sort of the rise of Commodus to emperorship, and then, you know, the fall and subsequent death of Marcus Aurelius. I thought that story and that Commodus was actually interesting. Because here because it's the tale of all this time. You have this spoiled rich kid who, you know, you have a Kennedy essentially. And I keep bringing up the Kennedy thing because I remember when I was in high school, a story was told, the legend of the Kennedy family, that where one Kennedy had died or whatever, and the father goes to
Joseph Kennedy.
The father goes in, yes, and the father goes into JFK's room and says, look, get the hooker out of your bed and put your pants on. You need to run for president. Oh, something along those lines. And I always thought that was hilarious. And a very similar thing happening here, almost to the letter, as a matter of fact, as the mom walks in and he's got the two women in the bed with him. That story in and of itself and his, at first being resistant to the idea, and I don't want to go to Germania, you know, and then getting there, and I don't want to learn how to use a sword, you know, that sort of thing. And then rising to the challenge and wanting to impress his father and wanting to do something with himself, finding that burning desire to live up to his name. I thought all of that was interesting. And I actually thought it made him somewhat of a sympathetic character. Where things start to go, where the second story is Commodus, the gladiator emperor, the paranoid android gladiator emperor. Because once we got to the point where everybody and their mother betrays him, and he decides he's going to fix it all by being Vince McMahon, you know, by being Vince McMahon and getting in the ring with various of his wrestlers, I was like, all right. And that, to me, wasn't an interesting enough story. Not to mention, by that point, he'd lost his mind. And rightly so. Everybody
oh,
attacked
yeah.
him. And I was just like, okay, we're watching three episodes of his slow descent into madness. And at the end of
yeah.
the day, you know, if he doesn't work those fights, he's more sympathetic. The fact that he's a big faker, he's a phony, a big fat phony, you're like, good, I hope you do get stabbed.
No, for sure. And I think, I mean, we're almost jumping ahead on some level. Maybe we better just stop here and we'll come bring up some of these other points. But I think you're right. The back half of this series for me was a slog. Not
yeah.
gonna lie right now. I actually have episode 6 on right now because I've tried to watch it twice and have not gotten through it yet. So hopefully by the time we get to the end of this, I'll be through the episode.
Sounds good.
And I think the
All
other
right.
thing that happens is that Commodus becomes very one note.
Yeah.
I think he's kind of one note throughout the series. He's just playing one note at a time.
Yeah, I think that's the problem. Is he was more interesting, as I said, when he was trying, I want to be somebody, as they said in the Nine Inch Nails song once. I would say, and I don't want to get too far ahead, so I'm going to say this, and then we need to, you know, kind of discuss it as episode by episode. But once Cleander takes things a bridge too far and does the grain manipulation so that he can take on more power, and then subsequently he's found out, and it's sort of the final betrayal, it's that's where the series peaks for me. Because after that, it's everyone's out to get me. I want to be a gladiator. Everyone's out to get me. I want to be a gladiator. Everyone's out to get me. I want to be a gladiator. I'm fucking dead. And it's three episodes of that.
yeah.
Drove me fucking crazy.
Yeah, that's not, I don't think you're too far off on that one.
All right. So we're back to episode 1 here, Ballin in the Poiple. You know, let's talk about some of what we see here in this episode. You know, like I said, he's centered Germania. He's made to learn how to fight and learn the finer points of being an emperor. You know, I find commenting on this to be somewhat difficult in that I want to comment on some of the historical aspects of it, but how do you Monday morning quarterback history? You know?
No,
I
that's
mean,
fair.
It's hard because there are things about – there are decisions that Commodus makes, historical decisions he's making here. I guess it'd be hard to be like, well, I don't understand why he didn't do this and that. Well, he fucking did them. That's history, folks. But I do – I guess it's worth commenting on they make a big stink out of Marcus Aurelius fighting this unending war with the barbarian – the Germanic
Germans.
Barbarian tribes. You know, we've got the Goths, the Huns, the Visigoths.
These were more Germans proper.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So these aren't. All right, then these aren't the barbarian tribes that I'm naming. These were actual Germans.
I don't think so. I mean, they were in Germania. These were German tribes. A lot of the, I wish they would have taken a little more to set this up, and they did get to it at one point, is that what Marcus Aurelius was fighting was actually a defensive holding war. Not a war of expansion necessarily, because what had happened about 100 years before this, and let me catch my exact date, but the Romans had a disaster called the, I don't know if battle's the right word, but the... there we go, Teutoburg Forest. So it's called a battle, but it was really more of a massacre of the in a place in Germany north of Danube called the Teutoburg Forest in 9 CE. So basically about 100, because it was happening about 190. So it was about 200 years ago. So basically the Romans lost somewhere between 16,000 to 20,000 dead. Dead or captured. They lost two legions that were then struck from the imperial rolls when they basically got caught by a series of German tribal leaders that basically just waged a guerrilla attack against them over the course of, I think it was a few days. And at this point, the Roman army basically said, we're building fortifications along the Danube River. We are going no further than this because, well, look what happened the last time.
I think that's as good a point as any to point out that's a disaster of a plan. That, I mean, you're basically fighting a war of attrition. It feels like, that feels like Vietnam to me. Is we'll just stay here, go no further, you know, not attempt to try to end this thing. We'll just fight a war in perpetuity. And, I mean, I'm no general, but that feels like a bad move. But again, it's what happened. I'll throw it out there, but I don't know how much we can really discuss the drama of a historical event.
Yeah, exactly. And I should also say right now, I'm not really a Roman history guy. I'm more of a 20th century history guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like Roman history and everything like that. Like if you see, you know, when you're reading the titles of the experts in this, they're actually not historians. They're classicalists.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a separate realm of study because the relative age of the sources and trying to read in between a lot of the, for lack of a better word, the press that happens in those sources is kind of a discipline unto itself.
So I will limit my questions to the craft of this thing. We talked a little bit about some of the performances in this. You know, again, looks like they raided a gym. For people who were also taking English classes in college. But the guy playing Marcus Aurelius, he gives an interesting performance. I'm curious to see what you thought of him. He looks perpetually annoyed. Like, I don't know how much direction there was with the drama of this thing, but he gives this performance of he's got a migraine the whole time.
I mean, I think you're probably dead on with the direction comment. I swear to God, in some cases, maybe it was a point of like, you know, take a look at a statue of Marcus Aurelius and look like that perpetually.
Just giving him a picture and go, this is what I want. This doesn't tell
me
anything.
Yeah, did you see,
what I want.
Oh, who is that? Like, okay, there's going to be two things that I kind of got stuck in my head whenever I was watching the drama scenes in this. And one, it's Gladiator, obviously. And then two, it was the HBO series Rome.
You know,
a hell of a lot more fun.
I was going to say, I almost pitched Rome season one to do instead of this, but that's long and complicated.
I don't think it's that long, actually.
I thought it was like 13 episodes.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, it's not like it's
20.
True. It's not like it's Arrow, which goes on forever. I think my idea was, if I'm going to ask people to come on and do this, I shouldn't ask too much of them. So I went with 6 instead of 13. But at some point, Rome is on the list of something I do want to talk about. I watched most of the first season of that and really enjoyed the hell out of it. But, oh, boy, is that dramatic.
Because Legionary Titus Pullo is the bomb. And yes, I just used the bomb to be recorded for posterity. Sorry, kids.
Before we move on to episode 2, a big part of the first arc of this thing is whether or not Marcus Aurelius will be with us for too much longer. And we have this, I guess you could call it a subplot, where his wife, I believe the character's name is Faustina. Of course. I'm looking at...
Yeah, I think Faustina.
Yeah, okay, here we go. Yep, Faustina, the daughter of the Roman Empire, blah, 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 Roman Empress. Here we go. So Faustina the Younger starts to put a plot in motion to usurp power from who she thinks is a dead Marcus Aurelius or a dying Marcus Aurelius. Just curious as to what you thought of the character portrayal, what you thought of the actress.
I mean, like... Again, any questions about the acting are kind of like, you know, it was kind of interesting. It was probably one of the more interesting you know, subplots in the series, and I think you're right where the front half of the series is a lot stronger than the back half. One thing that I think, you know, kind of talking about some of the historical stuff and some of the stuff they would have found interesting and I think contributes to other storylines down the road is they don't talk a lot about the fact about this whole co-emperor thing that Marcus Aurelius and Commodus did. And that's actually a really common thing throughout Roman history. At one point, they were operating on not until much later, but on a regular period, they were actually operating with four emperors. Because of the size of the empire.
Right.
And
would make sense.
Yeah. And they don't even really talk about it. And it kind of goes getting a little ahead of ourselves to Lucilla's character, Commodus' sister, who was played by Connie Nielsen in the Gladiator. They make a mention to Lucius Ferus. Lucius Ferus was Marcus Aurelius's co-emperor.
You know, again, you know, when you're talking about something the size of the Roman Empire, you know, they do bring up in the narration, but much later on, in reference to Commodus sort of just botching the job, you know, that you have to delegate, you have to have people around you that you can trust to do, you know, certain jobs. So it absolutely would make sense that there would be, you know, regional governors and you would have co-emperors and things like that, especially in terms of if you know your time is fleeting, that you're going to want to pass on the job to a capable person and, you know, not have your legacy be that you took a shit on it on the way out. You would want to make sure that the person, you know, learned from you and is able to carry on, carry the empire on and make sure that, you know, chaos doesn't reign. So all of those things make sense. I mean, even now in 2017, we have a period of handing over the reins and, you know, we have Donald Trump meeting with Barack Obama and, you know, that whole thing, a peaceful turnover of power, as it were. So all of that to me makes sense.
Yeah, episode... and to put things in.
Keep going.
I was about to say to put things in perspective in terms of like how difficult this was to manage Rome at its greatest extent. Rome went all the way from, and I'm drawing this in my head, basically all the way from, I'm just going to say to England, because they basically did the whole walled off thing with Scotland as well. And so all the way through England, through France, most of Central Europe, Italy itself, all the way through Turkey into the Middle East, into Egypt, they were all the way up into modern day Georgia, Russia, not southern United States. So, I mean, it was a massive amount of land. So they ended up, I mean, at one point, I mean, this is where things get really interesting, is that they actually split the empire in the Eastern and Western Empire. And, you know, people consider the end of the Roman Empire, and this was the only university course I ever took on Rome, was actually the later Roman Empire, that when it when the Roman Empire ended in, I want to say, about 480, that was really the fall of the Western Empire. The Eastern Empire went on as the Byzantine Empire, Constantinople, until 1492 when it was besieged by the Turks.
We actually talked a little bit about that, not intelligently, but a little bit about that last night when we discussed the Pax Romana comic book, you know, which talks about sending a modern army back in time to the time of Constantinople.
And, you know what? I've heard that story before.
Yeah, it was an interesting comic book, to say the least. All right.
Yeah, a friend of mine told me about it. I think it showed up on Reddit the first time a few years back.
Mm-hmm. Not bad. It's worth a read. The Making of an Emperor. The Germanic tribes strike as Marcus Aurelius succumbs to disease, leaving a skeptical Emperor Commodus to prosecute a war that doesn't interest him. Oh, gosh. I feel like this is the one where Marcus Aurelius finally does die, and I believe this is where he ends the war, correct me if I'm wrong, where he doesn't see he ends up doing a peace treaty with we'll just go with Germans, where they secure the border, some of the Germans are brought into the army, and basically Commodus returns home. Okay, I'm good. I have to do this. I have to bring these things up, and I understand it's sort of arguing with the wall. You're not going to get any good answers. But just for the sake of argument and discussion, I'm going to throw this out there. So you have this far-off backwoods that you've now just secured and decided is going to be your border, and there's this discussion of what is Commodus's great legacy going to be? What is Commodus going to do now that he's ended the war? And while ending the war itself in some ways was a good thing, you know, he has brought peace to the Roman Empire after X amount of years. My first thought is, and it's only because I've played a lot of Civilization, the video game. Once you have peace and you have these far out borders, and the, why not start building these areas up? I mean, Rome was this great metropolis, but you have all of these vast cities, many of which are backwaters. As emperor, and you're trying to figure out what is your legacy going to be, why not be the Franklin D. Roosevelt of the Roman Empire and start, you know, public works projects for as far and wide as your coffers can bear? It just seemed weird to me that he had so little vision and nobody else sort of in his ear going, hey, we have this holy shit big empire. You might want to make the places outside of Rome contemporary with the central city here, you know, or at least, I don't know, maybe give them clean water at least, maybe build aqueducts, do something to build up these areas and solidify people's loyalty to you from Portugal to Israel. You see what I'm saying? Or am I like talking crazy?
No, you're not. I mean, I'm definitely getting into the gray area of what my knowledge is of Rome, but I mean, a lot of it, I think probably a lot of it was done. The problem is a lot of it was lost in the fragmenting of the empire. So, for example, one thing that the Romans were very good at was road building. So, I mean, there were, I'd have to go back, but I mean, yeah, you've probably heard the phrase Roman roads before, and I mean, that's true. There are a tremendous number of Roman roads that are still, that, you know,
right,
were not until a couple of hundred years ago.
Right, but that comes out of necessity to move your army. That's why I didn't bring up roads.
Yeah, exactly.
Mind you,
part of this was that also they were using a lot of this land for agriculture as well, because, you know, having a metropolis like Rome, you didn't necessarily have all the, obviously we had this whole conversation about the grain and things like that, but I'd have to think of it more. I mean, I'd really have to dive into Roman history more. I have a feeling there was probably more building. And I mean, obviously one of the big things they did was, one of the major economic things in Rome was maintaining a standing army. I mean, that's one of the reasons the Roman Empire was it. It was, to borrow from Dan Carlin and Hardcore History, Rome was one of the few ancient powers that could take a punch, and that's because they were constantly training, they were constantly recruiting, they were very good about, speaking of the peace treaty, one of the things they were very good at was going to a conquered or potentially conquered people, recruiting them, and then integrating them into their army and bringing whatever special skills they had. So
right.
Rome started as basically kind of the Roman legionary, and you know, they had the big square shields, they had the gladius, they had the pilum, and you know, they had the tortula formation, you know, all the stuff from Gladiator. But I mean, they also they recruited in cavalry, they recruited in archers, they recruited in chariots, they recruited in whatever worked. And I mean, obviously that was a big cost, but for some reason I want to say that there was probably a lot more building and a lot more expansion of things, though that could have also, for some reason I want to say that happened a lot more in the east as well, but I could be totally wrong on that.
And I would like to think that some of the emperors did what I'm talking about, but they don't say Commodus did. And it doesn't come up. His big claim to fame, again, the Vince McMahon of the Roman Empire, like, hey, we've just brought peace to the empire. I'm going to return as the new emperor. What's the first thing you're going to do? WrestleMania. All right. You know, going to distract the people with games. You know, and there's this whole interplay with him in the Senate. You have the Cassius Dio and the other Justus Futz, and the one who's kind of willing to play the game with him, Dio is. The other guy, he's looking to fuck him any which way but loose. And of course, you know, we'll talk about what happens to him in another episode. But
yep.
I can't remember the name of the senator. But yeah, there's the we liked your father. Your father ruled with a nice strong hand. You're a putz. You know, and so they don't want to work with him. And there's this they mess with him. He messes with them back. And one of the ways he does that is, you know, we're gonna do games. We're gonna do a day of games. And we're going to make the senators pay for it, and then we're going to build a wall, and we're going to make the senators pay for that too, and it's going to be fun. And it's going to be huge. All right. So, and I just remember watching that and going, really? This is what this guy is known for? Like I said, he's somewhat sympathetic to a point, but I do look at some of those decisions and go, yeah, I can see why your reign didn't last very long.
Well, I mean, he did reign for 12 years, which... I mean, isn't bad among the Roman emperors? And I mean, probably once we get to the end, I have some other ideas on what they potentially could have done with this series, and we'll get into that because I think runtime's a big issue with this whole thing.
Yeah, this could have been shaved down a bit to maybe 4 episodes, but yeah.
we're about to have a Hobbit conversation.
And what do you want to cut, for Christ's sake? All right, anything on episode 2 that tickles your fancy, gives you a burning desire?
Not really, no.
All right, guys, we've been at this for 40 minutes already? Jesus. All right, Enemy of the Senate, episode 3. Commodus rises to power as Rome's new emperor, but not everyone supports his ascent. Among those conspiring against him, his older sister Lucilla. All right. And again, I may be confusing my episodes a bit, but I feel like this is the one where they have the big confrontation, she and he, about how your great offense to me was that you were born. And again, I'm watching this thing going, are you so bad at this? Are you so bad at politics that you don't, then that rather than banishing this woman, or upon hearing that she is sought in a plot to have you killed, you don't go, I understand you're looking for power, and maybe put her to some degree, as any woman can be in this era, in charge of something, you know, in a consultancy of some kind, the way women do in antiquity. Just, like, he comes...
Like, again, look at the Rome series. Look at how all the women played the game there.
Right. Exactly. And I'm looking at him and I'm looking at this decision and go, you hurt my feelings, I will have you banished and then subsequently killed. Like, why not employ her in some way? And I don't mean like, you know, employ in the traditional sense of here's a job. But I mean, you have this woman, they make a point of saying she has all these political connections. She's got a mind for certain things. You need someone to help you run this fucking empire. They continually make Commodus very ham-handed in his handling and in his thinking, and very sensitive. I don't want to be as crass as to say butthurt, but that's almost like how he comes across. You know, my sister tried to have me killed, you know, I'm going to react to this in a my feelings are hurt kind of a way, and not in a strategic way, I guess is what I'm getting at here.
Yeah, I don't think that's inaccurate the way he's portrayed.
So that's the major crux of this episode. Again, we get a lot of dramatizing of it's funny, we have this sort of high-handed, you know, here are the facts of the thing that went on, and then you have this sort of daytime soap opera part of it. It's the series gets to be, after a while, very jarring in how they sort of flip-flop between presentation of facts and the drama.
Yeah, I mean, I think also, again, like I said, I think, you know, beyond the portrayal of Commodus himself, like I do find you know what, screw it, I'm going to go for the obvious joke. This somewhat looks like this is a Roman documentary directed by Zack Snyder. And I say this as a Zack Snyder fan.
Everything's
but it's
gray,
like,
huh?
Yeah, it kind of is, actually. I'm watching the sixth episode, and it is all really in gray tones. And, I mean, I think I think that's the one thing that the HBO Rome series that I can think of off the top of my head got right in spades is that they looked at the whole gamut of the social structure. They looked all the way from
mm-hmm.
Julius Caesar down to Titus Pullo, who's awesome. And it gave you that to use the Dan Carlin phrase again. I'm a big fan of Dan's. I think he's very good in terms of popular history. I mean, it brings the color to the series. It talks about the society. It talks about you know how people lived and everything like that beyond you know sullen, angry CrossFit Commodus.
You really do bring up a great point, because Commodus is not an interesting enough character for the amount of time we spend with him.
Sure, go ahead.
I brought this up in my prosecution of Dude Where's My Car, that if you're going to spend 90 minutes with a particular character, that character needs to be either interesting or charismatic enough for you to want to spend that amount of time with him. You want to be rooting for that character. And, you know, Sean William Scott, whatever the one that isn't Ashton Kutcher.
Sean William Scott.
Is it nearly as interesting or nearly as charismatic to want to spend that much amount of time with him? And Ashton Kutcher barely makes it to that. And you have the same problem here. That's a great point that you're bringing up. I'll go ahead and let you. We sort of talked over each other there, so go ahead and make your point that you're trying to make.
Oh, no, I was just agreeing with you on that point, though. I will say, going into another aside here, if we want to talk about a movie, speaking of Dude, Where's My Car, if we want to talk about a movie that I think was actually from the same production team and I think actually addressed a lot of those same problems, the first Harold and Kumar Goes to White Castle is fantastic, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, it's brilliant. Because those two are funny and charismatic and interesting, and there's enough happening with those two characters, you don't mind spending 90 minutes of nonsense with them. That's
oh, exactly, and it's
difference.
Still a freaking hilarious movie.
Oh, it really is. And it's also a 90-minute commercial for White Castle, which literally, when I saw the movie, all my friends and I that we saw it together all went like, is anyone else having a hard time not going to White Castle right now? And then we all got sick. But that's a story for another day.
We have no White Castles here, so it's on my bucket list to go to one of these days.
Oh, you simply must. If you come to the United States, I recommend rioting and White Castle. It's the two things we do really well in this country. But
sure, what was the first
thing? Anywho, rioting.
Oh, right. I don't know if I'll be rioting anytime soon, but White Castle is definitely on there. I also hear something about something called In-N-Out Burger, which sounds good, so...
Yes, if you find yourself in California, you simply cannot leave without an In-N-Out Burger. All right. At this point in the story, I feel like... Okay, so yeah, between episode 3 and episode 4, this is where a lot of the meat happens, and we certainly get to a peak of action, because after this, boy, do we start to fall off the map.
Yeah.
This is where... A couple of things are happening here that we need to talk about. First, you have the one guy who I believe was a freed slave who becomes his what's the word I'm looking for here, Andrew?
His confidant?
Confidant, yes. And it gives him the signet ring, and Cleander gets all jealous of him, and they end up he ends up getting him killed. There's that part of it. There's by this point, yeah, he's figured out that his sisters tried to have him killed. I think at this point they've also figured out that the one senator was working against him, and he's killed by Cleander. Eventually, everybody around Commodus is falling. He's getting no good advice from anybody, and Cleander is starting to try and take more and more power for himself. As we said before, Cleander takes things a bridge too far, engineers a food crisis, that ends with him being killed.
Yeah.
Didn't know when to stop seeking power, he did.
Yeah.
Which leaves
And by the way, Commodus did not shank him in the middle of the Roman Senate.
That was dramatized, eh?
That was dramatized. I had to look that. It's like, okay, wait a second. I got to look this up now. It's like, nope, he was not shanked in the middle of the Senate.
But this is where things take a turn. There's the subplot of the wife not giving him a son and him kind of turning on her and taking on one of the slave girls as a mistress, a concubine, the term they use. This is where we see more and more of Marcia. But the other thing happening here is Commodus going back to the well in terms of how do I fix things? How do I make it all better? Public works project? No. Exactly. A public works project? No. War? No. Taxes? No. Games? WrestleMania? Oh, fuck it. Okay. It's the one answer to everything. But he's
Hit
not
the Christian for the chair.
He's not just going to give them games. He's going to compete in the games because, you know, we can't find a good enough heel for Steve Austin. So fuck it. I'll do it myself. people listening to, by the way, everyone, if you're playing the Rattledge and Broadcasting drinking game, you take a couple of drinks for the constant wrestling references. All right.
I've been drinking throughout, Mark. Don't worry.
So I guess I'll just ask you about that. As you're watching this, if you don't know that much about him, and you're watching this not just as a historical information, but as a story, and he goes, "How do I fix this? Fuck it, we'll do games, and I'll compete in them." What's your reaction to that? If you know nothing else about this person, you know nothing else about Commodus other than he's one of the five shit Roman emperors, the one that brought about the darkness, as it were. And you're seeing the story unfold the way that I did, that really, this is it? This is the sum total of who you are? You're some asshole who the answer to everything is, fuck it, we'll do games? What's your reaction to that?
I mean, you know, they kind of talk about it quite a bit. It's a guy who's not prepared. It's a guy who doesn't have the temperament for this, and it doesn't work out. And I mean, okay, I'm going to bring this up once. I'm going to do it because someone will comment if I don't. It felt like they were ham-handing in some Trump references. Because they were emphasizing
really?
The unpreparedness. They were I don't know. Maybe I'm drawing a very vague thing, but I thought it was ham-handed and pointless. I'm not speaking in support of this comparison, but I don't know.
I'm not going to argue that it's there. I didn't see it, but then again, I think I've somehow managed to block vague references to Trump from my brain. Like, if they appear in front of me, I won't
That's
see them.
Fair.
As if
I'm getting there myself.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I
exactly. I will say that the Boss Baby is much more a reference to Wall Street and Glenn Ross than anything else.
The Trumpiness. God. Anyway, you know, maybe. But yeah, it's hard to watch this. You know, it's like watching a TV show where, or a movie where your main protagonist gets to that point of the story where they're terrible and can't pull out of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where you're just, this might be too old a reference, but it's like watching the Basketball Diaries where, I don't know if you've ever seen this. Yeah, but Leonardo DiCaprio's character gets to the point where he's so pathetic. You can't, he's like, you don't even want him to get better. He's so bad. And at the end of the movie, he's just screaming, if I remember correctly. And it's just like, this is not a sympathetic character at all. It's more contemptible. And you just want it to be over.
Historically, the one I think of is The Tudors.
Okay.
Did you ever watch that one? So basically, it's Jonathan Rhys-Meyers. So he's playing King Henry VIII. It's only really about Henry VIII. And it goes through this entire series, and I think it's 4 or 5 seasons long. And by about the end of season 5, you've gotten to the point where it's no longer about, or at least for us when we were watching it, it's no longer about, you know, the intricacies of this character or anything that's like that. It's like, let's see what he absolutely goes batshit crazy about this week.
That's what it was.
And it's because Jonathan Rhys-Davies, like, just played it so over the top. Like, I mean, you know, like, if they did a comedist melodrama in that style, I'd probably be all over it.
So McNulty from The Wire. After sort of his redemption. Okay, well, he sort of redeemed in season 4, and then he goes right back to being complete bag of shit in season 5, and he's, like, irredeemable. He's so bad in season 5, you're just like, oof. You know, the whole world in Baltimore just starts to fall apart at the end. To the point where you're just like, please just end this. As much as I love The Wire, I could have watched that for 10 more seasons. It did get to a point where you're just like, this isn't savable. Sink the ship. we're done here. So moving on to, unless there was a burning desire here for Rome is Burning, episode 4.
Not really.
All right. Episode 5, Fight for Glory. A disastrous grain shortage reveals Cleander's treachery. We talked about that already. And leaves Commodus isolated, inspiring the train as a gladiator in a bid to unite Rome. All right, so this brings us to where we started with our good friend Commodus here. You know, we are shown him fighting a gladiator. The gladiator is doing his best to entertain. He's knocking him down, knocking him out. You know, and then mugging to the
he's
crowd.
He's no selling.
Yes, and eventually. Commodus throws sand in his eyes, and then he stabs him with the pole, and you know, and he wins the fight. And there's a succession of these fights. I don't remember if it's this episode or the next one where they start to figure out, hey, if they've been had, this is a work. He's giving people dull blades. It is okay. So it's episode 5. Things are looking up for good old Commodus. I don't remember what the major part of the drama was for episode 5. I mean, clearly the bit about Cleander's in there, so I skipped ahead a little bit. But the early part of his gladiator games, the only real drama here is no one wants him to do it, and then he does it, and it's successful, and he's getting the recognition and the love that he craves by being a starlet. You know, he's being a what do you call it? An athlete, a star athlete. Celebrity athlete, that's the phrase I was looking for. He's getting all of what he wants by being a celebrity athlete. And it was frustrating for me to watch because, again, I'm looking at this going, how in any way does this make you a good leader? You know, it was making me laugh. And as I think about it now, it makes me laugh even more because we talk about the idiocracy, specifically the movie where they have Terry Crews as the president and he's like an MMA fighter and you know, an actor and all this other, he's a celebrity, a celebrity athlete who becomes president because of his celebrity. But that's supposed to be the future.
I haven't seen that whole movie, but I've seen the first 10 minutes where they kind of explain how they got there. And that is one of the most disturbingly genius things I've ever watched.
What kills me is that we have this tendency to go, things are the worst they've ever been. And then I look at this guy, and granted, he wasn't an elected official, but if that's even remotely accurate, wow, we haven't changed. We haven't changed at all. We are still en masse people who will gladly glom on to a celebrity doing something physical, doing something entertaining, in lieu of any kind of actual, like, do the nerds ever win, Andrew? Do the people who can actually run things ever win? Was Woodrow Wilson the last time a nerd got power in this country?
I would say Obama was pretty nerdy, but...
Ugh.
I mean,
on
some level, when you look at it, I don't know if things turned out too well for Wilson either. Anyway, that's getting into a whole other conversation, but...
When will the Spiro Agnews have their day? That's what I'm trying to ask you. When will the Spiro... No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I would say, actually, I mean, I think that's kind of one of the... I think, you know, if we want to talk about other things that this thing's kind of trying to do, just when you, even when you see the you know, the title Roman Empire Reign of Blood, like when I first saw it, it's like, okay, I'm assuming that because they're giving this very broad title, we're going to be seeing some kind of general survey level length of the Roman Empire or something like that, or something along that line.
Yeah, I was expecting I, Claudius. I was expecting I, Claudius.
Yeah. Well, even Claudius was a relatively short amount of time. But I mean, you know, like I was kind of, but I mean, you know, you look at Marcus Aurelius. Marcus Aurelius right there is a perfect example of the nerds winning, because he's a guy whose writings, as far as my understanding was, are still the basis for a lot of philosophy, still the basis for a lot of governance, still a basis for a lot of things if you go back far enough. And I mean, it's kind of, like I said, it's a bit of a disservice to the series, because they wanted to go for the, you know, the bang crash games and boobs, for lack of a better term. But they decided to go in that direction, and you could have started to tell this narrative along the line of, it's like, okay, so Marcus Aurelius was this, you know, amazing genius guy. There's episode one, and you know, you talk about his reign and everything that happened in it. You know, then you get into Commodus, and you start to say, okay, point one, this was a guy who obviously wasn't prepared, who wasn't a man of literature, who wasn't, and who really a generation or two before probably wouldn't have been selected as emperor. Because again, when you look at it, like, you know, the Roman emperors didn't choose their sons. They chose other family members, but they chose the best dedicated of them. So for example, when you look at, you know, when you talk about like Claudius, there's a perfect example. Claudius had a limp, and he was deaf in one ear, and he had a speech impediment. Like, he's probably not, you know, he's probably not winning elections here or anything like that. But the emperor prior, or I'm trying to remember, was he preceded by Caligula? He might have been. But in any case, it was on some level, I mean, it was an oligarchy, but it was also a meritocracy at some level, where you're at least often getting qualified people brought into either the Augustus or the Caesar level of the Roman, kind of the high end of the Roman Empire. And again, you could have told that as part of this story to say that, well, here's kind of where the descent begins. If you want to read kind of a fall of Rome narrative.
Since it's a long time since I've actually sat through I, Claudius, I think I may not have remembered exactly how long it's supposed to take place within the Roman Empire, but the series itself was like 13 episodes long. It goes on forever.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Episode 6, 14 Days of Blood. Lavish Imperial Games at the Coliseum.
Can I back for 1 second?
Sure. No, absolutely. Go ahead.
I have a burning desire on this one, and we want to talk about this whole thing about the sympathetic character. Near the end of the episode, there's a scene where Commodus is in with all the gladiators, and he gives them like this stirring toast of blood and honor and burning and things like that. And all the guys go batshit for it. If this series was really being brave, I would have almost liked them to see the gladiators underplay that reaction. Just to kind of put it a bit more to the point of saying, wow, this guy is completely and totally out of his depth.
Yeah.
Or again, you know, talking to kind of the Rome mold of things, I would have liked to have seen the conversation among the gladiators after that scene.
Right.
But again, they
rarely ever cut away from Commodus, you know, and just as a craft thing, especially in the later episodes, we rarely cut away from Commodus, and it's like, well, it's not doing anything that interesting in what you're showing here, so I don't know why we're staying with him this long.
he comes, he's broods, he's narrated over, and then we move on.
Yeah. And then he's making a list. You're on the list.
He's checking it twice.
You just made the list. All right. 14 Days of Blood. Lavish imperial gains at the Colosseum are highlighted by the Emperor's bloody victories, but his paranoid abuses of power lead to a final betrayal. All right. So we talked about the fact that he's working matches at this point. He's giving everyone dull blades, and the gladiators themselves are basically throwing the fights at the right moment. So, again, these are worked shoots, as it were. And this is all designed to make him look like the conquering hero, but he knows that if he actually competes fairly, he's probably going to end up dead, D-E-D, dead.
Oh, yeah.
Now, at this point, he's freed the slave that was the gladiator slave that had trained him, which does come back to bite him in the ass once he figures out that that they're working fights here. And that whatever excuse Commodus makes, you know, for, you know, dying for the glory of Rome and the emperor and all of that, is a bunch of horse pucky, and he ain't having it. And so not only that, but you've got Commodus, who has made a list of people who he's going to get killed because they betrayed him. And when those people find out, they're like, all right, enough's enough. He's got to go. And go he eventually does. Commodus, I believe, is killed. I don't remember. Go ahead. You just watch this. So what happens here? I'll let you give us the gory details. How does Commodus finally bite the bullet?
Basically, and I kind of listened. I watched this with the sound off, so I didn't quite catch all the narration. But basically, the gladiator narcissist from episode 5 that trained him. It starts the episode with providing him with a wooden sword that actually freed him because all gladiators were slaves, and then him basically finding out that this was a whole work. I would like to point out that at this point that Narcissus was wearing his gladiator armor for the entire fucking episode. It's like, dude, you're a free man. Go get yourself some new clothes. Seriously.
Hey, you got it. Hey, listen. I learned when I was wrestling, always have your gimmick on. You never know when you're going to need it.
No, for sure. But any case, so basically he finds that it seems like there was some plan to try and assassinate Commodus via poison. That didn't work out. But then Narcissus comes back later and basically does him. I don't think he stabs him. I think he strangles him.
Right.
And then basically cut to credit.
Yeah. You have some final moments with the classical historians, you know, who are, you know, telling you, sort of summing up the life of Commodus and sort of giving some final thoughts on it. Like I said, in general, I would give this whole series a B-. It's okay. Looks nice. First half of it moves pretty well. Second half of it, eh. I have to wonder, when you're pitching ideas and you're doing, okay, you know, we want to put together a series, we want to take a real close look at one of the Roman emperors, we're going to look at one of the shit five. In your mind, Andrew, what do you think is the reason they pitched Commodus? Of all the people they could have focused on throughout the length and breadth of the Roman Empire, not Nero, not Caligula, who at least had a porn made after him. You know, they had the good sense to make a porn of that move of his life, which was fantastic. If you've never watched Caligula, get a copy. It's fantastic. One of the best movies ever made. But I mean, not Nero, not Caligula. Commodus? I can't even begin.
He's kind of an also ran.
Yeah, of all the people they could have focused on, and it's not like there's been a ton out there, certainly
yeah,
not on Netflix.
Yeah, I mean,
ahead,
if you wanted to, you could have done like a 6-episode series of the 6 worst emperors in Rome, and that probably would have been a really good way to go with it.
Yeah, one episode for the 6 worst would have been, you know, really, they couldn't have told Commodus' story in one episode?
Yeah, exactly. Like, they could have cut this thing down to 2 episodes max.
Right.
Yeah,
yeah, they could
I'm going to jump in on
done
something
his
else.
His rise and fall, and that's it.
Okay, I got to jump in on something here because I just hit the Wikipedia pages. I finished watching the series and reading about his actual assassination in 192, and they totally fabricate that thing.
Did they?
So, yeah, Narcissus wasn't a gladiator. He was just his wrestling partner.
Ooh.
And Commodus wasn't actually – Narcissus was already part of the – I mean, I think – again, I didn't watch it, but it didn't look like Narcissus was part of the conspiracy. He had just gone and confronted him out of his own part of it. But Narcissus was actually his part of the conspiracy, and he strangled him in his bath.
Okay.
Like, it's okay, guys. Like, again, not being able to figure out what it wants to be. Does it want to be historically accurate? Does it want to be a melodrama?
See, I have a real problem with that, because if you're going to do a documentary series, but you're going to dramatize, you still have to keep with the facts. You just can't then make shit up because it makes for better drama. That's Gladiator.
Yeah, exactly.
You're
like, I mean, I'd rather watch Gladiator 6 times in a row than go through this again.
Yeah. That's really odd that they would met that in a document in a documentary series where they're using drama to just, you know, sort of act out the things they're telling you, and then still not even, you can't then use creative license. That's bullshit.
Exactly. Again, kind of comparing to something that went along the similar template. Like, I mean, and again, this isn't something that I'm particularly versed in, but like that Killing Lincoln show did a really good job because it was about 2 hours long. It was about a period. It was about a period of about 2 days, and you hired some good character actors to play everybody, so all of those went well. You had good narration. You kept it pretty straightforward. You didn't go from there. You didn't try to cover 12 years of history from a period that we don't have a lot of verifiable facts on. Like, it's just like, again, I think the approach is kind of off. And I think one way to say this series kind of has this weird ability to cover both a lot of breadth, or I'd even say it doesn't even cover a lot of breadth, but it doesn't have a lot of depth either because of all the really poor drama. So, like, I remember years ago, like, you know, they talk about the whole games and the gladiators and stuff like that. And, I mean, I remember seeing – in fact, you know what? I've probably got it on DVD. There's a couple of pretty decent Gladiator documentaries. I think one of them was included on one of the special editions of Gladiator. And it really starts to get into the whole psychology of it. It gets into the fact that gladiators themselves weren't, they weren't just two guys with a sword. There were different classes of gladiator. There were, if you're an RPG fan, then that's what I mean by classes, that they were actually guys who came out with different equipment. They played a somewhat different role. They fought in a different way. And there's a whole psychology behind that. I mean, when you get into some of the extravagant games, I mean, I can't remember if it was the Colosseum proper or one of the other Roman arenas that they actually flooded so they could hold naval battles.
Oh, that's awesome.
Like, why don't you talk about that stuff? Like, it's just, there's a head scratching thing of just like, what was their approach to this?
Hey, we have this really uninteresting emperor. Let's show a lot of detail about him. All right.
Let's show him brood for 2 episodes.
And we'll do it in a CW sort of, you know, drama style. And I say that and love being a huge fan of like Supergirl and The Flash or whatever, but I don't know how much of Arrow you've ever watched. Oh boy, does
not
that
a lot,
show
no.
get repetitive? Okay, do yourself a favor. Try to binge watch an entire season of Arrow and count how many times Oliver blames himself for the weight of the world. It's ridiculous.
No, that I can believe that. But I mean, like, you know, again, talking about this alternate pitch. So, again, me with my admittedly not great knowledge of of, you know, Roman history. Like, you know, so you have Marcus Aurelius, you go to Commodus, but I don't know if they talk about this. Then the year after, literally, there are five emperors. Because what is it? I think... Yeah, so Commodus was killed on New Year's Eve, and then... So I'm just reading off of Wikipedia here. And then... Basically, one was killed, another couple were ousted. I think one may have died of natural causes. Like, you know, like, okay, put from Marcus Aurelius through the year of five emperors into a series, and that's interesting.
Oh, yeah. Just...
Or do the last five Roman emperors. I think that's a really interesting story.
Or here's a thought. Do Constantine. No, not the magic, not the magician from the DC. By the way, we were just as an aside, since I brought up Constantine, we were talking about Halloween costumes because it's, you know, almost May, and we need to start thinking about these things. Anyway,
oh, for sure.
So I'm trying to convince my 6-year-old that she should be Zatanna for Halloween, since my son's going to be the Flash. I figure, well, let's have two DC superheroes. Makes sense, right?
You're a good father.
Nice. So I don't know how I feel about my daughter wearing fishnets. I'm probably going to do something else with that look. But in any case,
do something else with that look. But that's a good character, though.
You know, we watched the episode of Justice League Unlimited where Batman sings the blues, and I showed it
that's
to
fantastic.
Her. Just because I wanted her to see Batman sing. But also, there's two female protagonists, and Zatanna is in that episode. I thought, you know, my daughter is absolutely into any strong female character anywhere, anytime. So as many of them as I can expose her to, I try to. So I was like, okay, here's an episode that focuses on Zatanna. Let's watch that. She loved it. She thought it was great. She thought Zatanna was an awesome character. I'm like, you should
well,
be
even
Zatanna,
her original
or,
Batman the Animated Series intro was great.
And she's obsessed with Poison Ivy. And I'm like, there are other characters, okay? Let's get away from Poison Ivy for just a minute. So I wanted her to see it. And then I was like, okay, you should be Zatanna for Halloween. That's an easy costume. We just need to get you like a lady magician costume and boom, you're Zatanna. That's the beauty of it. And so she's slowly but surely now getting into Wonder Woman, which makes sense. You know, there's a huge push now in the media for Wonder Woman with the movie coming out on June 2nd, which then we'll be reviewing the week after on DMU Hollywood here on the Round Hunter Broadcasting Network. Smooth as butter. Anywho, so she says to me today, she says, I decided I don't want to be Zatanna for Halloween. I want to be Wonder Woman. And I was like, you know what, Lily, I support this. As long as you pick a DC, Justice League type character and your brother continues to be the Flash, I'm in support of this. In fact, I'll go you one better. If you keep with this idea of being Wonder Woman, I will also pick a DC character. And she was like, that's great. And then she proceeded to name three Marvel characters I should be, and I had to beat her. But that's besides the point. For fuck's sake, Star-Lords and the Guardians of the Galaxy, that's Marvel. So I was like, you know what, Lily, let's make it a family thing. We'll have your mom also pick a character. And look, my wife would be the first person to tell you there are certain looks that would not look good on her, given her current size, shape, and appearance. She'd be the first to tell you that. My wife is a beautiful lady, very, very pretty woman. Any one of my friends will tell you she's got wonderful eyes. That actually happened once. I almost punched my friend in the nose for that. But we all, you know, you can be aware of your look. And I'm sitting there, and
comic
I'm trying to find...
Comic characters are not drawn relative to real people.
No, they are not. I jokingly told her she should go as Power Girl, and she was like, maybe around the house for you, but that's about it. But I'm desperately trying to find a character, a female Justice League character that she could go in costume. And on any given day, I'm like, none of these are going to work. Absolutely none of them. And I'm just sitting there looking at the way these characters are drawn and thinking to myself, it is amazing more women's groups haven't burned down the DC offices. Because at least in some cases, some of the women in Marvel wear a cloak or some shit. They're not all wearing, you know, they're not all wearing, you know, what looks like a bathing suit that's been chewed up by a dog. I mean, but the DC ones, nope. They all look like strippers. Every last one of them. Every last Justice League character, female Justice League character, looks like they could double as strippers. It's just, it's sad. So the deal was, I figured I'd go as the version of Superman where he just wears t-shirt and jeans. We'll do the same thing for you. We'll just get you a Batgirl t-shirt that's got a cape on it, and you can do Batgirl and t-shirt and jeans, and that's how we'll handle that situation. So he was like, it's fucking May, drop the subject. I'm like, all right. So anyway.
See, now you've got me planning for Halloween, because I'm going to negotiate with my 3-year-old on what she wants to be relevant to anybody else. So,
does the 3-year-old have an idea of what they want to what they want to be? Is there a theme here, a direction we're going in?
She likes the Disney princesses, but she tends to swerve at the end. So, like, literally, I think we had her in a Belle costume for about 5 minutes, and then she does suddenly decide to swerve and goes to Snow White instead.
Yeah. That's what happened. Lily did the same thing to me one year, where it was Elsa, fucking Minnie Mouse. I don't know how that happened. Like,
yeah,
they,
exactly.
they just walk into the store, and suddenly they're into something completely different.
I've got her. You know, I've got Annabelle like leaning towards Rey, so I'm hoping we can go with that.
Rey from Star Wars.
Oh yeah.
Okay, that's a good choice. Now, are you going to do a joint costume with her? Like, if she does Rey, do you do Kylo Ren? What's the plan here?
I honestly God want to do Kylo Ren really badly, actually.
Well,
because I'm not putting my son in the Kylo Ren costume. That's not going to end well.
Yeah, that's
I don't want to encourage that. Just saying.
Exactly. It never ends well for the dad. All right.
No, exactly. He's kind of round and rolly. We might just make him BB-8.
There you go. A little beach ball on him, paint it up, good to go. You gotta get your wife involved in the mix too. You gotta give her a martini in one hand and a gun in the other and tell her she's Carrie Fisher.
I think I might be able to get her to do Jyn Erso.
Boo, Princess Leia, come on. But wishful drinking Princess Leia. Have you ever seen the cover of the wishful drinking book?
No, I haven't.
Look it up real quick. That's the version your wife should be. Princess Leia from A New Hope, but with a martini in one hand, looking just looking ever so depressed.
What's the name of it called?
Wishful drinking. And while Andrew does that, I think we've covered this. You want to give any final thoughts to this series? Anything else? Any other burning desires? I'll let you have the last word here.
Not really. Like, this is just, I think you and I kind of hit on it, that it's kind of, it's a bit of a mishmash. It doesn't know what it wants to be. I don't know. On some level, I kind of have a feeling like, if I can do some, you know, backroom speculation here, I have a feeling like, you know, Netflix had a look at their success with, like, The White Helmets and with 13, which is amazing, by the way, if you get a chance to watch that. And they said, hey, guys, let's get some more documentaries. And then, well, someone said, like, Spartacus is really big. Okay, let's do that. Let's do Rome. Who can we do with that? How about Commodus? Yeah, sure. How many episodes do we need to fill out? 6? All right, do that, get some PhDs and some PhD candidates, and get some people from the gym, and away you go.
I'm on the Wikipedia page now. I'm actually curious to see if this is going to, in some way, and I don't know how they would, or if they would, you know, obviously they have to focus on a different Roman Empire, Reign of Blood. Oh, my God.
There's not much on
pending for renewal. Yeah, no, just... I'm looking to see if they're going to renew this thing. And it says pending. We might get another Roman Empire Reign of Blood Season 2 with a different emperor. Because if they go back into Commodus again, I'm going to flop. more from the life of Commodus. You better not. All right. With that said, I think we can bring this to a close. This is fun. You know, I rarely get to talk about stuff that isn't comic book related anymore. So it was fun to talk about something different. You know, this falls under the heading of I wanted to try something new, much like when we did Chef's Table earlier in the year. And, you know, some of the stuff we discover and we talk about is a big hit. Some of it, not so much.
Yep.
Also Cooked. That's the other thing I was thinking of. Cooked and Chef's Table. I don't do much in the way of talking about food documentaries and cooking shows and whatnot, but we did, and we gave it a shot, and it was fun. It was fun to talk about this. Don't know how many of these documentary-type drama series I would do in the future. Though, if you have any recommendations of something I simply must watch and talk about, now's the time, sir.
I don't have – I was actually going to bring that up because I had a bit of an idea. So something just came up here on Netflix that was just released this month. I haven't had a chance to watch it yet. It's called Five Came Back. So it's a documentary about – five very well-known, and this is more of your traditional kind of archival documentary with interviews and stuff like that. So I don't think there's much drama to it, but I think there's some interesting stuff. But it's about – let me see if I can see who it is, but it's – let me pull this up. So it's about five directors. Where is it? Oops, wrong one. Oh, there we go. 2017 series. So, who produced this? Yeah. So, okay. Executive producers include Steven Spielberg. Was Hanks involved in this? Maybe not. But this is about basically John Ford, Frank Capra, John Huston, William Wyler, and George Stevens. So, you know, five very well-known Hollywood directors, and this is about their time in World War II.
Yeah,
and a lot of it's talking about a lot of it's also talking about because they did a lot of documentaries and things like that, and a lot of the propaganda pieces, which also, by the way, have now been released on Netflix themselves. So I think that's
okay.
Kind of an interesting one, especially with Dunkirk coming out in a few months and things like that, which I believe I'll be reviewing with Winfrey. So.
Yep, and because I'm not going on a cruise, so will I.
Yeah. So this one has – so the guys involved, like, they're talking to are, like, Francis Ford Coppola, Guillermo del Toro, Paul Greengrass, Lawrence Kasdan, and Spielberg.
Oh, I'll have to check that out. You know what? We'll give that a look-see, and maybe sometime – maybe around the time of – see, what do I have on the schedule during the week of Dunkirk? Let's see.
Yeah. There's actually one other one that I just watched, and I don't know if this one's available in on U.S. Netflix or not, but it's called Our World War, and it's a three-episode series that's about actually the British involvement in the First World War, and it covers kind of three very short periods based on guys' letters and accounts and things like that, and it's got kind of an interesting presentation style. Like, it's all the period-accurate costumes, but on some level they almost took, for lack of a better word, Call of Duty Modern Warfare presentation in places. And I quite enjoyed it. It might be worth a watch, and it's also kind of – that one might be good just because there's a couple of really significant centennials as far as World War One goes, I think. I was just reading in Time that I guess the U.S. entry into First World War was a few weeks back.
So if you want to do Five Came Back, that's doable. We can do that. I've got something scheduled for that week, but that's something we can move. We just need to record ahead of time because I actually will be away that Thursday. I'm going to be driving up to West Virginia. Almost seven, West Virginia. So if you and I can do a sort of a YouTube thing and sort of pre-record this, and then we can put it in the can to air July 27th, I think that would be fine.
No, that sounds like fun.
All right, Five Came Back.
I have thoroughly enjoyed this one, Mark. Thank you.
No, absolutely. I always enjoy having you on the show. I find your knowledge of these things, even when you say, I don't know about how much I know about this. Eh, you know more than I do, so it's fine. go ahead.
I was about to say, also just to throw this one out here, because you are very much a food guy, and I enjoyed the, I can't remember, was it The Cooked or was it The Chef's, what was the food podcast you did a little while ago?
We did two. We did Cooked in the, closer to the beginning of the year, I think it's February, and then Chef's Table, we did a couple of weeks after that.
Yeah, I really enjoyed those, and honestly, I would say I think you guys get Anthony Bourdain Parts Unknown on U.S. Netflix. Give it a try.
Mm-hmm.
I think you'll enjoy it because, I mean, I know Bourdain elicits a lot of different opinions, but I think he's a guy that understands on a very basic level food is a method of communication between culture. And with,
okay.
A lot of his shows have been really good, but Parts Unknown is really interesting because this one's done with CNN. He's got a lot of backing, so he's gone to some very, very interesting places. So, I mean, I think – let me just look this up really quick. Just on my own. Yeah. So season one – pardon me, as my thing waits to load. So, like season one, he went to Myanmar, he went to Libya, and that was after the revolution. He went to the Congo. So he goes,
okay.
And he also goes to other places like Peru and that. And a lot of his. It's evolved because I've watched a lot of his stuff, and it's kind of evolved from being kind of a very acerbic view of food and things like that to a very genuine interest in kind of food is communication, food is culture, and then talking about cultures and places and people and how they live and how they interact and things like that. And there's all kinds of interesting stuff on there. There's a lot of really good episodes on various parts of the United States, New Mexico, Mississippi. I've got one on here for Los Angeles. Los Angeles is specifically about actually Koreatown. His Bay Area one is one of my absolute favorites because it's largely martial arts based. Because at this point he is this is him actually going to train with Half Gracie and I can't remember the teacher's name, but. There's a lot of really good jiu-jitsu stuff in there, which I'm always down with. So, yeah, give it a try. Maybe that one could be a future TV party.
The Anthony Bourdain, what's the name of it?
Parts
Unknown.
Yep.
Okay. I know we're pretty packed for the, up until pretty much August. I know the last two quarters of this year, I'm going to be looking for stuff to look at. So I will throw that on the list. In the meantime, I want to thank you for coming on the show. Andrew, never allow yourself to think that if you got an idea, I don't know about this. You are always, your ideas and anything that you want to do with us, you're part of the family. Anytime you want to do something, let one of us know and we'll get it done. Always enjoy talking to you. When in Rome Week continues. Tomorrow on the Metal Hammer of Doom. Unfortunately, we're not going to have Robert Cooper. He's got a crazy work schedule these days. And unfortunately, we did this for him as one of the ones he suggested, he's unfortunately not going to be able to be on the show. So Jesse and I will be holding it down for When in Rome Week, XDO, The Immortal Wars. And then at a special recording time of 11 o'clock, late night, Pat and I will be doing the Lizzie McGuire movie. And that's going to bring us to an end of When in Rome Week. Next week, no crazy themes as such. Jesse's got some mystery show planned, I guess, for Monday. We'll see what he's got going on. On Tuesday, my daughter will be very happy. We'll have a girl on the Revolution Broadcasting Network. we're going to be doing the Powerpuff Girls, season one from 1998. And then one that I'm very excited about, Metal Hammer of Doom, Life of Agony, A Place Where There's No More Pain. The couple of singles they put out have been interesting. Mina's voice, since she's no longer Keith, has changed somewhat, but it's still the Life of Agony. Despite the change in the vocals, it's still the Life of Agony that I know and remember from the River Runs Red days that I've heard so far, at least. I'm excited about A Place Where There's No More Pain. I have been for quite some time. We'll talk about it 10 o'clock on May 3rd. And then finally, On Trial is back with our first of two shows for the month of May, both in the science fiction realm, the first one being Contact with Jodie Foster. I hear the movie's a piece of shit. We'll see.
I enjoy it.
I don't know. I've never seen it. I just know that the end sort of falls off the rails from what people have told me. But, you know, you enjoyed it. Hopefully I will too. All right. You want to go ahead and plug anything you're working on or things that people should check out?
Definitely. Thank you very much, Mark. And thank you very much for having me on. I'm a tremendous fan of the network for, 5 years now. And I'm always happy to be on and talk about this stuff. So anything comes up, do let me know. In terms of my own plugs, I train with Havoc, JKD here in Calgary. That's Havoc Jeet Kune Do. You can find us on Calgary JKD.com or on Facebook as well. That's under Seafood J. Cooper. We're also a part of the Jeet Kune Do Athletic Association under Harinder Singh Sabharwal. You can find a location close to you at JKDathletics.com. My studio, Havoc JKD and Esteem Martial Arts, is actually having a grappling seminar coming up this Saturday with Sifu J. Cooper and Sensei Kevin Davey. The title of the seminar is called Hell on Legs. It will be a grappling-based seminar. If you happen to look this up and Kevin Davey looks a little familiar to you, it's because he's also on AMC's Hell on Wheels. So decided to do a little crossover there. Hell on Wheels is actually just produced right outside of Calgary as well. So information on that is available online if you happen to be in the Calgary area. If not, if you're outside the Calgary area and you're interested in any of what we do, jkdathletics.com. Thank you very much.
All right, folks. Thank you for joining us. Again, we'll see you tomorrow night on the Metal Hammer of Doom. In the meantime, be well, be safe, and behave.